We can have discussion, right? Okay, I should. Good. All right, the topic is toxic masculinity. I'm reminded of a guy at Abingdon. I'm going to start out here for just a minute. I'm reminded of a guy at Abingdon Church of Christ one time. It was country. And he said, when they ask me where I go to church, I tell them I go to the round church where the devil can't corner you. I figured maybe that's what we had in mind here. I looked at this topic for quite some time, and this is one of them that gave me a difficult time, which is not normal for me. That usually goes fairly easily, but after a lot of prayer and consideration, I had about an hour and a half worth of material. Not going to work, so I backed that down. Well, then I looked, which they give you this thing like months in advance. Then I looked at the schedule, and I realized David Shannon is preaching on the truth about masculinity. So I guess I am, if we're all drowning, I'm just here to describe the water, right? Toxic masculinity, what does it look like? What I'm going to ask you to do at the end of this is I'm going to ask you to comment, to get involved, and to come up with some ways in which the toxic versions of masculinity have hurt us spiritually and have hurt the church. Again, David Shannon is going to be about the remedy more so. And so I wanted to look at this. I was, just to get us started here, I was, 10, 11, 12 years old when Rocky IV came out. Anybody seen the Rocky series? Man, I was still young enough that the bed could be a boxing ring, and it was, magically. And I found a big pair of shorts, and I was Rocky, and I could do this and push right here, and a muscle would pop up, because I was probably 70 pounds soaking wet. And so Rocky that was the man. I was going to train like that. I didn't know where I was going to find that much snow or a bunch of Russians, but I was going to train like that and fight. And so everybody was going to cheer me on. And then I found out that Stallone is like 5'7". So I thought, he's not as big as I thought he was. He's not as much of a man as I thought he was. Then, of course, I grew up. The debate now is who's the greatest basketball player of all time. And if you didn't grow up in my era, a lot of people say LeBron James. Well, I grew up in the era watching Michael Jordan. And I say blessed to watch basketball back then. It was much different. And Michael Jordan was just the epitome of competitiveness. And the stories still abound about Jordan and what all he did and how he played and so forth. And then you find out that Jordan, in many ways, is not that good of a person. Now, everybody has a lot of things to say about everybody else, it seems like, but just seeing you, he's not quite the family man. And so you start to realize as you get older that masculinity and being a man is not quite what you thought. It's interesting that I've been given this topic because I grew up with a serious lack of self-esteem. I didn't know who I was. I can't tell you how much money I blew. I started working 16 years old at Hardee's. I was the kid that said, I'll never ever flip burgers. That's the first job they offered me, the first one I took, and the one I worked for 2 years, flipping burgers and cooking chicken. And I can't tell you how much of my money I blew on clothes, because I thought if I had better clothes, better friends, more popularity, I'd get a better car, and some of those old concepts. So in thinking about masculinity, I'll give you a couple of things here. It appears to be healthy. Toxic masculinity, that is, appears to be healthy, but it's actually destructive. It appears strong, but is only man makeup for weakness. Man makeup, that sounds kind of weird. Actually, it sounds kind of 2019, doesn't it? I submit to you that it's either a man or makeup, but not both. It's kind of like the man bun. It's either a man or a bun, but it ain't both. things like that that we joke about as well come into this conversation about masculinity. So it appears to be strong, but is only man makeup for weakness. It appears to be successful, but fails so many people. It appears to be godliness, but it's actually satanic in many ways. And if overreacted to, if toxic masculinity is overreacted to, we end up going too far in the other direction and not appreciating how God made us and what God designed us to be. I started thinking about how do I introduce and talk about a subject, toxic masculinity, a masculinity or a version of it that is poisonous. And so I started thinking about Jesus. I don't know anybody that would say, well, Jesus, he wasn't very manly. nobody says that, right? That Jesus was a lot of things that our culture sort of, in times past, or different cultures sort of look at and say, well, submission is not very manly, but that defined who Jesus was. In fact, when you talk to women who have trouble with that, and I married a woman who openly admitted it early on, she had trouble being submissive. And so when you talk about that and make it sound like it's a something that's negative, you say, well, I don't know of anything that's more Christ-like than to be submissive, but yet maybe that doesn't sound manly. Well, I started looking at characteristics of Jesus, and I thought I would go that route, but then I came across a passage of Scripture. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, let's go there. It's sad to a degree, but it's very true. 1 Corinthians 13, especially verses 4 through 6, define the opposite, the antithesis of toxic masculinity. So I want to look at these for a minute, and then we'll discuss as we have opportunity. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 6. Many of you already know what's going on here in what we call the love chapter. And in beginning in verse 4 in the ESV, love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy or boast, it is not arrogant or rude, it does not insist in its own way, it is not irritable or resentful, it does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. So, anybody, I wouldn't recommend this movie. I had seen it in times past when when I wasn't as critical of what I paid attention to, but there's a character in a movie called Tombstone, Ike Clanton, who was a real person, by the way, and Ike was the joke of that movie, right? He's playing cards with Doc Holliday, and Doc Holliday's main squeeze calls him her loving man. So he looks over and he goes, "You've been called loving man," as if to make fun of him. I thought, well, maybe we'll use that. Because that's what we're supposed to be, right? Loving men. Well, that didn't sound very masculine, though, does it? We got to say it deeper. Loving men. If I'm supposed to be this and be like Christ, then to be loving is to be patient. Now, I'm going to give you some instead ofs. Patient instead of, and try to give you some versions of toxic masculinity. Maybe you want to add on to these as well. Maybe you'd like to bring up some that I absolutely skipped over. A loving man is patient instead of being, of course, short-tempered. How many of us guilty of being short-tempered? Bill Haywood made a funny comment not too long ago about everybody's advertising for low T, right? And some of us are just glad that that actually lowers because we're not ready to go off at a moment's notice. We don't flip out of our minds because of all that testosterone. Maybe it's a good thing. Short-tempered. How many of you in here... I'm going to make it sound like a victim mentality, but I don't mean it that way. How many of you here are guilty of road rage? Because I had to turn that wheel a little further, a little faster. Well, maybe because somebody was rude and so forth. So being patient instead of short-tempered. Or instead of this guy. Well, I just don't put up with that. Great. I'm glad the Lord doesn't deal with me like that. I just don't put up with that. Patient instead of making somebody pay. What it means here, of course, is bearing with offenses and injuries of others. Now, that's not manly. Letting somebody walk all over me, letting somebody abuse me, and not avenging or not saying something in return. I really believe, honestly, that we have trouble with Matthew chapter 5. Because Jesus, in many ways, says, I mean in the church, we have trouble with it. Because Matthew 5, basically, Jesus is telling us, let people run over you. In fact, invite them to do so for various reasons. And we say, oh, no, that's not what he really means. I've heard more scripture twisting in that chapter than maybe many others. He didn't really mean that. He didn't really mean let somebody take advantage of you. And yet, behind the word sacrifice, Romans chapter 12, right, we're to become living sacrifices. You know what's behind that word? Victim. Become the victim. Now, when I start thinking about patience, what is God every day to you and me? A victim. What is God every day to you and me? A servant. What did Jesus come here to do? To be a victim. And we could go on and on. So this patience is about bearing with. What about being the new sport? Anybody heard about the new sport? Getting offended? Who can get offended the fastest? Well, somebody who's not patient is easily offended. Does that define you? Other concepts of a lack of patience that shows up in this toxic version of masculinity. Okay, that's how it is. 1 Thessalonians 5:14 says, encourage the faint heart, help the weak, and be patient with them all. We're not usually, as men, we're not usually good at helping the weak. Some of us are just not good teachers, are we? You ever try to have somebody teach you how to work on a car? I've had 3 or 4. They didn't teach me anything. They just did it because they didn't have the patience to teach me. But it says, help the weak. What about those who are spiritually weak? Do we make fun of those people? Do we belittle those people? That's what happens with bullying sometimes, right? We belittle those who are weaker than we are. It can happen spiritually as well. Ephesians 4:2 says we are to bear with one another, right? Christianity's endurance, isn't it? It's endurance with each other sometimes. It's endurance with the world. Now, the other thing is, while I'm looking at 1 Corinthians 13, I'm also thinking of the Beatitudes. When you look through the Beatitudes, those don't describe usual manliness, do they? Blessed are the peacemakers. Not me, I don't take that. I'll just tell you what, I'm going to stand up and give them what for. Okay. How does peacemaker fit into that? I'm going to make sure nobody insults me, nobody runs over me, and so forth. Any thoughts here with patience? All right, I want you to be thinking about how this shows up in the church, because I've got a few ideas. How this shows up amongst us in the church and how it affects us spiritually as well. Secondly, a loving man is kind, right? I thought, well, kindness is kind. I'm sort of a wordsmith at times. But kind is to just be pleasant. That doesn't even sound manly either, does it? Pleasant. That's at the root of this. But to be kind and to show kindness to other people. Instead of being harsh and hardened, we men can be good at that, can't we? Being hardened, coming across as harsh, not being welcome. You ever been accused of not being approachable? It might be that you give off too harsh of a look. It might be that you are unapproachable and not patient and so forth. How about when we make fun of people? Are men like young guys? Do you remember being a young guy? Are we good at making fun of other people and putting them down? The guys who were different from us. Oh, I was guilty. And still at times guilty. You know, I think here, and this is going to be the touchy one that you're not going to like much. You know, the gay community is living in sin, but they don't need us making fun of them. How sissy they look. Do men need to be men and be separate from women? Absolutely. But do they need us to make fun of them, to belittle them because they are weaker than us spiritually or maybe weaker than us physically? Or how about running over a people to establish ourselves? Have you done that? I could give you bunches of examples here, but I don't want to use up too much of our time. Or to be intimidating. Man, all my life, I was that kid. I was scared. You say now, you know, 6'4", 6'3". I'm much bigger than I should be, but about 290 pounds. Well, when I graduated high school, I was this height and about 185 pounds. And when I started high school, I was this height and about 150 pounds. So I turned sideways and all you saw was shoes and a zipper. I mean, because it was not much to me. Did I get picked on? And I was the kid that joined wrestling in sixth grade. You know why? Because when I showed up, I thought there was going to be a ring that was a square with turnbuckles and ropes, and we were going to wrestle. I had caught on to the NWA, and I wanted to be the third member of the Rock and Roll Express. And I found out we wore really goofy-looking outfits, and we rolled around on the mat. But I did that for 4 years and endured a lot of jokes from that and got picked on quite a bit. So when Zach started lifting weights in high school and could grow facial hair, I wanted to be intimidating now. I wanted to walk into a room and guys automatically know I'm the bigger guy, I'm the tougher guy, or what have you. Well, somebody who's kind is not worried about being intimidating. Ephesians 4:32, be kind to one another. Tender-hearted. Oh, that's not manly. Tender-hearted, that's not manly. But tender-hearted, and that's how we forgive each other. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. Finally, all of you have the unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, and a tender heart and a humble mind. Kindness, anyone? All right.
Let me give you one.
Please.
Every time he ever led to prayer, would say, "Lord, help all the bad people to be good, and all the good people to be nice."
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's good. It was just that simple, but not today's. All right. Boy, it's hot in here, isn't it? Go ahead. You don't have to even raise your hand.
I just remember this guy one time. But really, Jesus was always in control, but he didn't have to let anybody know.
Exactly.
You know, like the disciples, they knew that he was the master.
Right.
But he didn't have to say, "I'm your master, you my people."
I'm sorry, man. I wasn't ready for that. Okay.
He said to him, he said, you know, any man that desires to live among them. Culture tells us that we have to be domineering and right. We have to force ourselves into the prime position. But in reality, the best way to get to that position, the best leaders throughout history, I mean, like George Washington, Washington didn't want to be president. Mm-hmm. Some did because so many other people told him.
Hey, you finish your thought. The best leader is a servant. Very good. What he's describing, power under control, we know that as meekness. Very good.
I agree.
Sure. That's part of that. Right. Hunter. He's not married anymore. Go ahead. I know, I'm kidding. Yeah. Right.
Of how that should work inside of the Bible, our culture would exist.
Right.
The tyranny that their tyrants come from.
Very good.
There's at least three men over there.
Toxic masculinity, that's the slogan. The same when the disciples, you were talking about the disciples were arguing about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom. Jesus was picking up a towel to go wash feet. A loving man is not envious. Instead of tearing down the guy next to us so I look good. We've done that before. You done that? That's usually when we're making fun of somebody else so we can look better, right? Tearing down the guy next to us so I'll look good, or trying to be the man. You know, my son, my oldest son, at an early age noticed something. Now, it's not true in all cases, but he asked me one time, "Dad," because a big diesel truck had pulled up next to us, and the guy that got out of it looked like he needed a trampoline to get up into it. And he said, "Dad, why is it all the biggest trucks have the littlest guys in there?" I said, "Son, there's something to it, and you'll understand one day." But it's that desire to be bigger than we are, to make sure everybody knows that I am the man, and I'm this, that, and the other, and some of us struggle with it in different ways, but we can be envious. A loving man is not envious. To define that as not heated or boiled with envy, hatred, or anger. Let us not become conceited, provoking each other, or envying one another. Galatians 5:26, James 3:14-16, this is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. I don't need to be better than you in order to be established. I don't need for other people to see me as better than you. Now, you know where I've seen this before. Bill and some others here that I'm not familiar with will probably be able to back me up on this. I remember I didn't want to be a preacher growing up for a variety of reasons. But I didn't want to. I didn't think I was ever going to be one. And my dad drugged me to a couple of things. And in those days, at those specific ones, he was dragging me. He drugged me to these things called preacher's meetings. Man, I have never seen more ego in one place than I had seen in some of those preachers' meetings. Arrogance. And I found out early on when I was preaching at certain places, the last person you were going to get complimented by was the preacher. Because we were competing. And I never understood that. I thought it was disgusting that we couldn't congratulate and help one another and appreciate one another. I don't know if it's still that way. I'm sort of out of the loop now. I still preach, but that guy that runs the jewelry store, Dempsey, that you saw, I work for him. He taught me how to be a goldsmith, and so it's kind of come full circle. I'm doing both now. But envious, thoughts here. Jealousy is the shadow of greed. Of course. What envy does, if I envy Tim and I'm jealous of him, then I try to battle with him instead of appreciating him. I can't appreciate his abilities and his skills if I'm envious of him and wish that I had those or jealous, you know, however it all mixes in. And so it keeps us from appreciating. It causes us to go beyond ourselves as well. Also, we'll probably have a very hard time dealing with my own weaknesses. We're not good with that, are we? Being honest about our weaknesses. All right? A loving man doesn't brag. What?
I
was just thinking of that in my mind. And I used to have that locked down, and I cannot remember how I had differentiated those.
I think what I've read about envy is that you really don't want it. You just don't want somebody else to have it.
Okay, that could be right. I apologize. I can't answer that question. There is a difference between jealousy and envy. Somebody help us out here. Apparently none of us
know. Jealousy is what he's got a right for. He's jealous of us, of our hearts, because he's got a right for us.
Okay, all right.
Our hearts.
All right.
That's why he can be jealous of
us. Okay. And this is a little bit stronger too, because behind this word translated envious is burning. So it's not just I don't like that you have it or I want it. It's that it's actually causing hatred and anger within me.
One is that you want what they have. The other is I don't want you to have it.
Okay, could be.
I can't have it, but I don't.
Could be.
Like it.
All right, so we all have homework, right? Agreed? Good deal. A loving man does not brag. Anybody in here who is not brag, raise your hand. Some of us are really good at it. Some of us are really good. Some of us not so good. But instead of trying to be the man and making sure that I'm seen and making sure that people know what I've done, I'll have to tell you this one too. I'm in preaching school. I graduated in 2002 at East Tennessee School of Preaching. So we are going to speak. We're allowed as students to speak on the lectureship for like 5 minute things. And we have to write the, what's the wording for the, what you write?
Manuscript.
And then we have to write a biography. So, I remember reading these lectureship books, which are great tools. And I read those lectureship books. And some of the biographies would challenge the length of the manuscripts. I mean, I have been to 46 states and preached the gospel and baptized 28,000 people and been over to this country and learned four languages and blah, blah, blah. And I would think, man, you know, we're really praising. Or no, I went to a lectureship, and they would get up and introduce these speakers, and I would think, who's getting the glory, God or this guy? Because they would just go on and on and on. Then I found out preachers write their own biographies. And we're all just trying to, you know, battle each other for who's better instead of God getting the glory. So you see behind the curtain a little bit. Daniel, remember Daniel chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar? We don't talk a lot about this, or I don't hear as much about this, but Daniel chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar had begun to pick up on God, right? We wouldn't call him faithful. It wouldn't be like Moses and Pharaoh. Hell, he's converted, like Bill said he might have said. But Pharaoh was starting to get it that God is God. And a year after some realizations, he's walking around the top of his palace going, look what I made. Look what I, by my power and might, have established. And immediately he was made like an animal after God stopped him right in the middle of his bragging and humbled him for such a time as he would learn. Matthew 5:3, the Beatitudes, right? Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. I have found that most, if not all, sin relates back to me trying to be God. Most sin, if you think about it, God needs to be the Alpha. God needs to be the Almighty. Most sin is me trying to play God. When we judge like we're not supposed to judge, I'll play God for a while. All right? We could say a lot about the bragging thing, couldn't we? It kind of speaks for itself, maybe. He's not arrogant. A loving man is not arrogant. Instead of ignoring my weaknesses and failures, arrogance will let you do that. It's always about the show. I had a 1965 Mustang I paid $1,000 for. Beautiful, red with, what's that called? It wasn't a convertible, but it had that white top. What's that stuff called, Junior? The vinyl top. Man, it looked good. I drove it home, and I ran two red lights because the brakes didn't work on it. And I found out that guy had ragged that engine out. This is why I got it for $1,000. And that was going to be too much money to put into a car. Looked great until I started it. And then the black smoke that came out of the back of it. To be arrogant is to be inflated or to blow up, to swell up, to cause to be puffed up. Knowledge does that, right? In 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 1. Proverbs 6:16-17. There are six things that the Lord hates. Seven are an abomination to him. What's the first one? Yeah, not even pride, though. That is the first one. Just looking prideful. He hates a haughty, arrogant, prideful look. Anybody done that? Oh, yeah. I walked into a basketball game on the team or walked into a wrestling match. Chest has got to go out. You got to be big, right? Yeah, that's that arrogance. And God hates an arrogant look. A look that intimidates other people. How many of you know somebody who the first word out of your mouth when you describe them is humble? You know that person? Do you have them in your mind right now? My brother-in-law, Martin, is as humble as they come. And it's hard to not get along with Martin because of this humility. Because he never looks like this, never acts like this. A loving man isn't rude. A loving man isn't rude. Tim, break his chair. Okay. Notice I went right for you, man. Notice I went right for him. That's the other Tim. A loving man isn't rude. A loving man isn't rude. Instead of being unapproachable, running over others' feelings, being inconsiderate. Or a guy using guy talk. I've been guilty. I'm sorry. But we say stuff, right? Well, I wouldn't say this in front of you, know. It's just guys. Well, Ephesians 5:4 says, let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place in the ESV. 4:29 in Ephesians says, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is occasion for, which is good for building up. How much of what comes out of my mouth builds up other people, and how much of it's absolutely useless? How much of it has a purpose, and how much of it is just crude? And we say, oh, it's just guys being guys. No, it's guys being guys they shouldn't be. Thank you. Man, we've already gone that long. Can't be that long. All right. A loving man doesn't have to have his own way instead of fake leadership or my way or the highway. Instead of not listening. Raise your hand if you're a good listener in here. Any good listeners? Yeah? Take a lot of training? The rest of us are like, no, I'm still working on it. A loving man does not have to have his own way. A loving man is not irritable. Instead of going off or losing my temper. And on we could go. A loving man is not resentful. I'm sorry I spent so much time in those beginning ones. I didn't realize it was that far in. A loving man is not resentful. Meaning, instead of I won't forgive that, or can you believe so and so, or how dare you, this, that, or the other. It does not take into account a wrong suffered. A loving man rejoices with truth instead of with wrong. Spiritual effects, real quick. How do you see toxic masculinity hurting the church? I'll give you one. We don't value our women and their opinions enough. Have you heard any women's role sermons lately? I wouldn't want to be a woman with some of those sermons I've heard. 25 minutes, if it's a 30-minute sermon, 25 minutes of what they can't do in 5 minutes, yeah, you can cook potluck and teach the kiddies. No wonder they want more respect. How else can they...